podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hello and welcome to the Run Run Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is Chris, your host, and whenever and wherever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in today. Are you ready to have some fun? Come on, let's go for a run.
Hey there, fellow runners. This is Chris, and I believe we're talking about episode 41. Today I'm coming to you. This is the Beaver Dam cast here from my litany of strange places that I go to. Me and the Wonder Dog had to drop my little one off at school for basketball practice, so by the time we got home it would have been dark, so I brought my stuff from the gym and we went out for we're out on the rail trail. Hoping it's not too windy. Brought in the rail trail in Boston, not in Boston, in Groton, Massachusetts, where I grew up, home of the ultra famous Groton 10K. So I'm out here behind an apple orchard standing looking at a pond, and a pond has ice on it. It's about 25, 27 degrees out, looking across to a nice big beaver dam. So I know there's some trails over there, really nice area. But today we're talking with Dave Kamir, who's a friend of mine. He is one of the guys that founded Cool Running, so works for Cool Running. And he's going to talk about timing, because he also owns one of the bigger timing companies in the area. I got some other stuff that I'll cut in, some different stuff, and hey, love running in the fall, don't you? And we're coming up on Thanksgiving, so everybody, you know, think about things to be thankful for. The self-help experts say you should write down the five things you're most thankful for, and you should tape them to the, you know, the mirror in your bathroom and look at them every morning. That's what they say to do. But I say have some fun and take the things, not the top five, but take the things you're thankful for that are down around, like, you know, 15 to 20. So you get down to stuff like, I'm thankful that I still have some hair on my head. You know, stuff like that. And write those down, because that'll be more fun. All right? It's like a parlor game. All right, on with the show.
And now for the equipment check.
Hey, guys, this is Chris. I've got some interesting audio for you. It has nothing to do with running, I guess, except that Duncan, the world runs on Duncan. I just finished a tour of the Northeast Regional Dunkin' Donuts distribution facility and learned all about Dunkin' Donuts distribution. So I'm going to share that with you because that's the way I am. And I'm all perked up on coffee here. I usually don't drink coffee afternoon because I'll be awake all night. But, you know, they're giving it away for free with these giant cookies. And so, hey, what the heck? I drank a bunch. So anyhow, I'm driving home from there. And interestingly enough, these guys are about $1 billion business, this distribution center up here. And they serve all the franchisees, but they are not an independent company. They're actually a co-op, so they're owned by the franchisees themselves. Each franchisee pays like a fee to be part of the distribution network, and then these guys move all the stuff around, and they move everything from the coffee, the donuts, the bagels, the ingredients, the chairs, the ashtrays, everything goes through this place. But some interesting stats. One of them was the little state of Rhode Island, is the biggest Dunkin' Donuts drinking place in the world. And they drink, and for those of you who aren't from the Northeast, Dunkin' Donuts is the biggest coffee brand in the Northeast states. And then it sort of peters out after that. But in the Northeast, they're rabid about it. I mean, there's Dunkin' Donuts every 20 feet up here. And I think what they said was their heaviest users are drinking 20 to 25 cups of coffee a week. And they actually call them users. That's kind of funny. Like a drug is what it is. It's coffee. But their biggest competitors are Starbucks and McDonald's. Starbucks is a West Coast brand. And they said in Rhode Island, There's, what they say, one store for every 2,100 people in Rhode Island. So sort of a blue-collar coffee. And the other thing, I was down in the freezer. I was touring the freezer in the warehouse and the refrigerator, so where they have the dairy products and the frozen products. And the refrigerator wasn't bad. It was like 30 degrees. But the freezer, they run at minus 10, which was a little chilly, even though, you know, I'm a New Englander with my sweater. So I'm going to get out and do a track workout tonight, and that'll get me warmed up for it. And so you say, what do they need the freezer for? Well, all those muffins and bagels and stuff you guys eat, all that stuff's frozen. It's all pre-prepared, frozen, and they just sort of heat it up in the stores. They quality check it and heat it up. The donuts themselves, they don't get made in the store anymore. They typically get made in these big manufacturing centers, and then they get trucked out. So a big franchisee will have a manufacturing bakery, and they'll bake these things up and deliver them to the stores twice a day. That way they get more space in the stores. The other thing they do is they ship a lot of donuts overseas. They actually, their biggest international customer is South Korea. So the South Koreans can't get enough of Dunkin' Donuts. And in the Arabic states as well, in the Middle East, they love donuts. So they don't actually ship the donuts, but they ship container loads by rail to the West Coast and then by ocean to Asia and the Far East of the ingredients. So, you know, flour and sugar and that stuff, and they bake them on site and eat them. So that's pretty interesting. So anyhow, that's my Dunkin' Donuts story. So wherever you are, go hunt up some Dunkin' Donuts. You can buy it in your stores now, because they made a deal with Procter & Gamble, and Procter & Gamble is distributing it through all their channels, like, you know, Costco and whatever your favorite grocery store is. Procter & Gamble will probably service it with Dunkin' Donuts, so go try some. Personally, I don't really like the stuff. I like Starbucks better, but, you know, what can you do? They seem like nice people. And, you're pumping money back into my economy if you buy Dunkin' Donuts coffee, so go buy it. So now I got to go home, and since this thing ran late, I'm going to see if I can squeeze in a quick tempo workout down the track, do some halves, and then I got to clean up and scoot over to my Toastmasters club. And that'll be Chris Runner's day. Got up at 5, go to bed about 10, work, 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 run, run, run in between. All right, see ya. Hey, just want to let you guys know, this is sort of an iconic moment for me whenever I drive down this part of the highway. I'm on Route 495. For you guys down south, that would be Route 495. And I'm passing exits 21A and 21B. And does anybody know what that is? Anybody? Anybody? Come on, anybody? You in the back? Yes, that's right. It is the Hawkington exit. So there's one Monday morning in April where we all drive up here and we get off on exit 21B, or if we're really early, we can get off on exit 21A, and we go to our Boston Marathon. So like I said, it's an iconic moment for me. These things sort of touch me this way, you know? And as the sun sets over Hawkington, Chris drives on.
And now for our featured interview.
Hey there.
Hey, Chris.
We're back. And we're live. So Dave, come here. Threatening to get you on my show for a long time.
That's good to be here.
So you tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, again, my name is Dave Kamir, and what do I do? I do a lot of things. Mainly, the thing I've done most of my life is run. I've been involved with the sport since I was 12 and got involved very early. Things progressed throughout the years, and somewhere around 1995, I met this fellow from Australia named Kevin Malloy, and the two of us put our heads together and came up with this idea for Cool Running. And yep. I think most runners are familiar with the site. And that still consumes quite a bit of my time. That's a full-time job still for me. Kevin's moved more into a consulting role, but he's still involved. I also own a timing company called Yankee Timing. That fills my weekends, and during the summer, a lot of weekdays. So, you know, I'm involved with the sport, you know, both from the internet side and from the internet technology side and the timing technology side. And that's pretty much what I do. That's my full-time gig.
Okay. So I wanted to talk to you. I was telling about the story where I was up at the Manchester City Marathon a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I did diligently. This is one of the few times where I actually set my watch and knew what my time was supposed to be. And when they posted the time, it was off by exactly the amount of time it took me to get to cross the starting mat. So you would set, and so I said, Dave, you guys stole a minute 24 from me. And you said, oh, we'll give that back.
Which so, I haven't yet, but I will.
Yes. So actually, Dave, I wanted to tell you that I screwed up. It wasn't a minute 24. It was actually 28 minutes, and I ran a 2:58.
Okay. That'll get you a pretty good qualifying spot at Boston this year. We'll take care of that.
Move up to corral number one.
Yeah, you'll be in corral. You'll be right in the front row, which is a daunting experience, I'll tell you. It's a very daunting experience. I've been there, and it's nerve-wracking to be up there with those antelopes.
Yeah, I think I get killed in the first corral. The best I've ever done is the third corral there. It does clear out pretty quickly when you're up front.
It does. You know, the thing that amazed me most about 1 year, I was very fortunate. I wasn't only in the first corral. I was actually with the elite runners up front. And you know how they separate the top 100, 150 runners? And
yep.
That was nerve-wracking, you know, being standing there beside Yuta Pipping, you know, and waiting for the race. But the thing that surprised me most, and I noticed it this year, is the gun goes off. And when you're in that position, your first mile is around 5:20. I mean, you really go up quickly. But you could just see hundreds and hundreds of people jumping into the race from the woods. And I never realized that happened. I always wondered why. You know, here I am in a front corral every year, but the gun goes off, and next thing I know, I'm like 1,000 people back. It just never made any sense to me until a year I actually witnessed what happened. Just people just jumping from the woods.
Those are bandits jumping into the front?
Yep, the bandits, you know. And,
they don't even,
you know,
they don't
if they're
going
to jump... What's that, Chris?
They don't even wait until the pack goes by?
No, they don't even wait for the pack to go by. It's amazing. Yeah, you think they would have that courtesy, you know. Maybe things have changed. This was quite a while ago. But, you know, that's what it was like in those days. Of course, there were, you know, in those days, didn't have the reinforcements of barricades that they have today, so maybe
a lot of those woods are gone too. They've built houses now.
Yeah, there you go. So it's difficult to hide, and maybe our buddy Dave McGilvery has figured out a way to prevent it. If anybody could figure out how to prevent them, it's him. So,
right.
You know, maybe that's not the case anymore.
Yeah, but I can remember running Boston and you know passing some guy in sweatpants and you know basketball shoes and going, what the hell is he doing here?
Yeah, how did he get there, right? Yeah.
How did he get here?
So. Long as he didn't pass you further down the road, you have nothing to worry about.
So you're the timing guy.
I think I'm one of many timing guys. You know, New England is as you know, it's a running mecca. And because there are so many races, there are quite a few timing outfits out there. Ours is probably one of the larger of the timing outfits. We do over 160 events a year, and business has been booming the last few years, which is a good thing. Hope it continues in these tough economic times.
Hey, you know, as runners, you know, we cross the finish line, and we know sometimes we have a chip on our ankle, and sometimes in smaller races somebody takes a popsicle stick from us or tears something off our bib. So we know there's something going on, but for the most part we have no idea what the mechanics of timing is. And I've actually had people ask me that question. You know, how does this chip thing work, right?
Yeah.
So give us the history of timing.
The history of timing. Well, I'll give you the history going back to the 70s. That's when I first got involved. In road racing in those days, this is the pre-boom. You know, most of the road races were relatively small, you know, a couple hundred people. And timing was relatively easy. The popsicle stick method basically is what happens is when you finish, somebody gives you a popsicle stick that has your placement. So you take that popsicle stick, you go up to a board, say, I place number 5. Another person has a list of times, writes in the time for position number 5, probably will ask you your name. And that's how, basically, timing was done up through the 70s. Then, you know, the running boom.
How do they figure out your time from that?
Well, what they do is it's probably somebody at the finish line recording, you know, position 1 finished in 26 minutes, position 2 finished in 27 minutes. And they would hand record the times. They would have a stopwatch. But they would literally hand record the times. Sometimes they'd use something called a tick sheet, which would allow them to check off times real quick. So they'd see if they were on a 27th minute and they had 3 people coming in at 3 seconds, they'd put it times 3 next to 3 seconds. And then they'd actually go in and correlate that list of times with those finishing positions and the names. Now, if there was an error in the timing, you could be off by 1, you could be off by 2. It wasn't an exact science. And timing never is, by the way. even today, and, even with the chips.
And it's really important. That's why in these small races they're always saying, stay in line in the chute, right?
Yeah, now today, fast forward to, races started, the running boom happened, and we had to find ways of timing people rapidly, and using tick sheets and stopwatches just wasn't working when you had several thousand people in a race. So what happened, some pretty innovative folks at a company called Flying Feet Computer came up with this thing called a time machine, which you can't use to go back in time, but you can use to record people's times. And basically what it is a small computer, has a button on it, and when you press this button, it records a time. Now that time can automatically be downloaded, to a computer, or can be downloaded later on. Now in addition to, now just think of one long list of times in your mind, 1 through 100, somebody clicked that button every time somebody finished, okay? Chances are, you can forget. Somebody can make an error. Hey, how you doing, Chris? Whoops, you turned your head for a minute and somebody came across the line. You forgot to press. You didn't press the button. So the time machine also allows for something called select times. And this particular time machine has a keypad on it. And what happens, and this is very random, but a good person on a time machine will get 85% of people. What they do is they watch runners as they're approaching the finish line. They type in their number. And when it hit the finish line, it hit enter. Now, when you look at these things on the computer, you have a list of all the times, okay? And then you have a list of select times, okay? And the select times are, again, are random. And those select times will match up with the competitor's number. So say, for example, number 35 finished in 29 minutes, but you look at the select time and it says, no, it finished in 28 minutes. You know there's a problem there, and you can go in and fix it. Now, a good timer will fix it manually, but there are automated tools that will align things for you. It'll either delete or add times based on a select time. The select times is sort of the golden rule. That's what you use, the baseline. That's what you use for your to make sure everybody is finished in order. So that's basically what happens. A lot of people don't realize it, but the timing is actually done at the front of the chute, but the order of finish is done at the rear of the chute. That's where they record. They either record your number or they pull a pull tag and put them on spindles. And the reason it's done that way is it's impossible to write everybody's number down at the front of the chute. They're just coming in, you know, in groups. So you sort them, right. You try to get them in order, and then you record them at the end of the chute. That's why it's important to stay in the order that you finish in once you cross that finish line. That's why people always yell at you, stay in order, so you can get that order of finish correctly.
And I've seen those guys standing at the finish line, the one spotter talking to the other person on the machine going, 15:22, 13:47.
And yeah, they're probably calling up the runners' numbers, helping them out.
Yeah. You know, and this is all if you don't have chips.
Yes, yeah, that's all if you have chips. The manual, we call it the manual method. It works quite well. But when you races, and we've had to do it for that way for such a long time. But around 12 years ago, some innovative guys in Europe, I think it may have been the Netherlands, but I'm not positive, came up with a thing called a championship. And basically what that is, it's a passive chip, meaning that it does not have a power source in it. Yeah. And when it passes over an antenna, there's a identification code on that chip, which is read by an RFID signal. So, if, for example, you're number one, it records, well, it doesn't really record number one. The championship has a table, but I won't get into the complexities of that. But basically, that's how it works in a nutshell. You come across, boom, number one's here. Number one goes into computer with your time already there. There's no need for selects. And then you can print out the results because the computer will match up your record with that particular number and that particular time. And it's
RFID,
much more efficient.
RFID is radio frequency identification.
Correct. Now, Championship had a monopoly on this business for quite a few years. They came up with the technology. They were innovative, and no one else was in the field because there really wasn't a good financial reason to be in the field. I mean, Championship owned the market, and running wasn't at a point where it was economical for companies to get into that business. That's changed. Now with these mega races, 2030, the rock and roll races, all the different marathons, half marathons across the country, it's now become, and the technology has also become much more, less expensive. Now there are a lot of players in the field. There are a lot of different timing companies out there offering chip technology. But the current, I guess, the most technological up-to-date system is a system called a D-chip, in which it's basically a paper tag that is affixed to your number, you peel it off, it has the chip, for lack of a better word, silkscreened onto this tag. You put the tag around your shoe, you run the race, and you don't even have to return the chip after it's disposable. Where with the championship or the winning times or DAG, you have to return the chip afterwards because the chips themselves are fairly expensive. These things are very inexpensive. They're easy to manufacture, and that seems to be the direction that the timing industry is going right now.
Yeah, and that's fairly recent development, right?
Yeah, it is. It is. And you're gonna see some incredible developments. And you'll see it in New England over the next year. We're really going to be getting away from what we call the foot chip over the next two or 3 years. And the chip will actually be right in your number.
Yeah, because I haven't seen one of those yet, Dave. I've done the ankle chips, the shoelace chips, like at Boston does the shoelace chips, and the that disc one that you guys had up at Manchester.
Yeah, that's the DAG system. Matter of fact, DAG is the only company that I'm aware of that offers a chip in the bib right now. It's used throughout Europe. It hasn't really been used a lot in this country. There are pockets where people are using it. But, again, it's a little older technology, so it's still expensive to produce. The D-chip, on the other hand, when they introduce their chip in a bib, it's going to be very inexpensive for them to produce it, and that's when you'll see a proliferation of these things. And that'll really change the way races are run. It just cuts out that whole step of distributing chips, collecting chips, categorizing chips. People don't realize how much work is involved in preparing for a chip race because you've got to sort all these chips, you've got to get them ready to order after every single event, and it'll just do away with all that, so it'll make it much easier. Easier for the timing companies, easier for the race organizers.
Yeah, I've only had one race where somebody chased me down looking for the chip, and I had turned it in.
Yeah, what happened?
What happened was I bailed at the half instead of running the full marathon, and whatever happened there, that screwed up their inventory. So,
yeah, we find that about 1% of chips aren't returned at all events for various reasons. I mean, they may hand them out earlier, and people just decide not to show up to the race. They get ill, or they're not in shape, or they may drop out during the race, or it'll just somehow go through the corral and never return it. I mean, there are various reasons. But, that's still a fairly low percent. When you're under 1%, that's not too bad.
And I see a lot of the elite-ish guys, the guys who do it all the time, they have their own chips that they bring with them.
Well, that's interesting that you bring that up because Championship was a proponent of buying your own chip, and they were selling chips for, $30, $40. But the problem is a Championship will not work with a winning chip time technology, and winning times chips don't work with DAG, and none of them work with D-chip, so if you go out and you buy a chip, keep in mind that you may not be able to use it at the event you're going to run. Championships can only be used at championship-timed events. And with so many systems out there right now, it's probably not a wise investment to purchase a chip.
Yeah, it sounds like they're all going to be using this new system within a couple of years. So it's like a piece of tape then. It's like a piece of tape, and you just tape it around your shoelace?
I use the analogy of if you ever go to a nightclub or a bar and they put a wristband around your wrist, it's very similar to that material. And, instead of putting it around your wrist, you're just basically putting it around your laces. It's smaller, of course, but, very, very similar to that type of material.
Now, I've heard that people do silly things with their chips, like wear them around their wrist or tie them in their hair, and then they wonder why their times don't get recorded.
Happens every event. Instructional sheets, being very specific where to wear the chip. And people don't read. I mean, that's all there is to it. And some people don't read, I should say. Let me categorize that. And we'll have people that will finish, and they'll come over to us and say, we ran out of results. And I'll say, well, did you have a chip? Oh, I had it in my pocket. Well, by the way, most chip fields don't go higher than 18 inches. So if you have it in your pocket and you're not 3 feet tall, it's not going to record, you really have to pay attention to where that chip is. And different chips, in different systems, you have to wear the chips a different way. For example, with the winning times technology, it comes on a Velcro strap that goes around your ankle.
Yep.
I've seen people put that around their wrists, because they didn't read the instructions that are on the envelope that you get when you get the chip. And Championship goes on the laces as does DAG. So you've got to wear those the right way.
Right, and the mat with the antenna in it is producing a very low-level electronic field to track that chip. And if you know how electronic fields work, they decay exponentially over distance. It's 1 over E squared, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so you get very far away, and they just don't pick up. You know, they could amp up the power on the electronic field, but then, you know, we'd have to sterilize all the runners going across the mat, and that wouldn't be any good.
Exactly. And I think all systems have sort of a governor in them that prevents you from doing something like that anyway. So, because, like you said, we don't want to sterilize the running population, at least not yet. So anyway, that's exactly correct. You described it perfectly.
So what's new over Cool Running these days?
Well, right now we're in a process of, we do a lot of people don't realize we do a lot of things behind the scenes. You know, what you see on the site, it's pretty static right now. It hasn't changed in a while, and it's going to stay that way for a little while longer. But we're in a process of making sort of a lot of backroom changes that will allow us to go to a more of a Web 2.0 format going forward, something that's a little wider than we currently have. We'd like to update the look of the site at some point.
Yeah.
So we're working towards that. We're working towards a regionalization of the site. So if you live in Georgia, for example, and you bring up our front page, you're not necessarily going to get the Boston Prep 60 mile. You may get the Georgia Ing Marathon on your front page. So those are the type of changes we're making. They're very subtle, and most people won't even notice the changes over the next year. Until we go with our new look at some point, and then that'll be drastic. But we'll certainly warn the community of any changes, and we'll look for input from the community before we make them.
Hey, the Boston Prep would be an excellent training run for the Ing Marathon.
Yeah, it would be. But as long as the temperature differential is not too bad.
Nope. You know what you need on that? You need podcasts on there. That's what you need.
Yeah, I agree. A podcast and also more video. We really don't have any video on the site right now. That when we go to Web 2.0, that'll allow us to do those type of things that we're not doing right now.
Yeah.
And this whole Facebook phenomena, we seem to be missing out on that, too. And that's something that I think we're going to have to address somewhere down the line.
Yeah, this new site came out a couple of weeks ago called runcast.tv, and it's got all running videos on it.
Oh, nice.
And I just put up my our hash run. We did a hash run with the club. It's pretty crazy. If you want to see me in a dress, go out and look at that.
Maybe I'll skip that one. No. Yeah, our parent company, Active.com, they have quite a few videos on their particular site, and that's sort of the model that we want to strive towards, but with the cool running sort of mentality to the site.
Great. Well, I think that's something that'll help people. Different people have different ways they like to see stuff, right?
That's so true. You know, anytime we change anything on our navigation, you know, we hear about it right away, you know. And sometimes we have to make changes just because we really don't have a choice. You know, technology changes. In our site in particular, I mean, when we started our site out, it was a very, very small endeavor. I mean, we didn't envision at the time that we'd grow to the extent we have. So a lot of our tools were ancient, and they were unable to handle the bandwidth that we were getting. So unfortunately, we've had to make changes that we didn't want to make, but we had to because of the traffic, you know, and I envision those particular type changes happening down the road too, and we have to increase bandwidth for video and those type of things. So.
So, what else are you doing? You're running it all?
Not as much as I'd like. You know, been battling that plantar fasciitis for the longest time. I seem to have that under control now, and started, you know, what I consider training again. But I got a case of food poisoning this past weekend. That kind of was a little bit of a setback. But you know, I'm hoping that this winter. That's the great thing about living in New England, is that you can really focus on your training during the winter. There's not a lot of distractions.
Yep.
I mean, what else are you going to do? I mean, unless you ski, there's not much you can do outdoors. So running is, I think, just an ideal activity, you know?
Once you get used to the cold, it's really no big deal. Like, I was down at the track last night doing 800s, and it was
nice.
20 degrees out, but there was no wind. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I think if it's calm and there's no wind, it makes it so much easier, you know. I mean, you can, you know, what was it last night? It must have been down into at least 20s, right?
When you're running. Yeah, I think we got, yeah.
So, yep. You know, that's not bad, you know. I mean, that's you know, decent. And as long as there's no snow on the track, you're good to go.
So how many races are you timing in a season, like in the spring season? How many races?
Well, we did last year, or this year, I should say, we did about 160 events.
Wow.
You know, so we're pretty busy. We have six crews, so you know, we can handle up to six events per day, and some days we did. And we've had to turn down quite a bit of business, unfortunately, just because we were booked. You know, the timing business, and I guess that's true of road races, it's sort of a bell curve. That's actually kind of like two bell curves. One's in the spring and one's in the fall.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, where all the events are crammed into like an eight-week period.
Yep.
Then it kind of falls off the edge, and then, boom, it picks up again in the spring. You know, and that's how the business works. I mean, you know, we'll go, you know, month of July and August, it'll be very relatively calm. You know, we'll have maybe 20 events for the month, and then all of a sudden September hits and, you know, it quadruples,
yep.
You know. And
So you're going down to Philadelphia tonight?
Yeah, I'm actually leaving pretty much after this phone call, going down to the Philadelphia Marathon, half marathon, and helping out Mike Thompson from Eagle Events. He's the technical coordinator. He works with Dave McGilvery. Myself and another gentleman named Steve Mullen, we're going to be in charge of the starting line and the turnaround point.
Oh, great.
And the only advice that Mike sent us this morning was bring along underwear. So it's going to be interesting. I guess it's cold down in Philly, too. I was hoping it would be a few degrees warmer, but it doesn't appear so. So it'll be an interesting experience. Looking forward to it.
All right. Well, that's great. I'm at my 20-minute mark, so we'll let you get on your airplane, and I'll go do whatever it is I'm going to do today. I look forward to doing some more work with you. Maybe we'll get out for a run sometime this winter.
Sounds good.
All right.
Okay, stay in touch.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
So, anyhow, I'm stretching out before my 800s here, but question you might have is how do I know to run 800 at a 630 pace? So how do I know to run a 315 half mile or 800? How do I know how to do that? I mean, do you get to the end and look at your watch and go, oops, it's 310, which I do sometimes, but that's not how you do it. What you do, here's how you do. You have to, part of the thing about speed work is you know how to feel, you teach yourself how to feel different paces. And so the way you do that is you got to run at a steady pace, all right? You want to be right on or a second above, a second below your pace all the time. So what you do is you mark the quarters on the track, which are going to be 100 meters, and you figure out what that time should be. So, for example, I'm running a 800 in 315. That means I'm running half of that for the 200, right, which is going to be a 137 and a half, and I'm running half of that, which is going to be around a 47-ish on the quarter. So I'm going to hit the hundreds at like 22, 23, 24, somewhere around there. And if you watch those, and what I've done is I've actually, when we're really focused on the pace, is I'll take a piece of that playground chalk and I'll write the splits on the track. Can't do it tonight because it's dark, but I'll write the splits on the track so I can see them while I'm doing my speed work, and I know whether to slow down or to speed up. And so you're holding that, you're burning that pace and those mechanics into your legs, and that's how you successfully do speed work at one pace. That's how you know. But I've been doing this long enough that I kind of know just by looking at my watch every couple hundred meters and checking. And I can usually do it by effort as well because I've been doing this long enough. And when you get tired, don't focus on effort, focus on form. Stretch it out, watch the way you're carrying your shoulders, your face is loose, your hands, watch all that stuff. Close, you know, picture in your mind one of the really good runners like a Billy Rogers or a Rosa Mota. Start running that film loop in your head and try to emulate that, right? All right, man. Sorry. Out.
Hey, this is Chris. I'm walking around my parents' house. I'm waiting to pick up the little one. She's at she's at basketball practice, so I'm doing my podcast on the fly because I'm a very flexible guy that way. All that's in here is near beer. I don't like near beer. Yuck. I'm raiding the refrigerator because that's what sons do. What is this stuff? Key lime, clear, It's like some sort of tonic water. I'll drink that. So anyhow, yeah, this is episode 41 in the can. And Buddy's here with me, too. I've run out of people to interview, so that's it. I'm done. I'm wrapping up the podcast. No, just kidding. You're not going to get up that easily. I'm going to find somebody. Don't you worry. And it's going to, next week, we're going to run the Air Fire Department 5K. Don't forget to come up. We'll give you some food. We'll give you some shirts. We'll give you some stuff. It'll be fun. It'll be cold, but it'll be fun. And I got a lot of travel coming up. So in December, I may slow down podcasting a bit because I got probably 4 or 5 trips. Some West Coast, some South, but I'll try to get podcasts done on the road. That'll be kind of fun. Tell you where I am, where I'm running, and that's it, man. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. That's it. The music today is called Breathe. It's a nice little indie rock tune called Breathe from a band called Lotus Dog, or it could be a song called Dog Breath by a band called Lotus, depending on how you read the label. So I kind of liked it. So anyhow, this is Chris. Hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you out there.
Rock, rock.
As I consistently emit speaker vibrations, send and receive the gift to transcend, collect and amass the wisdom to guide the intellect. Watch me juggle in the mirror in the light circuits. I come to speak the way it's love and I consent to merger.
I come to speak the way it's love and I consent to merger.
I come to speak the way it's love and I consent to merger.
I come to speak the way it's love and I consent to merger.
I come to speak the way is love and I consent to merger.
I come to speak the way is love and I consent to merger.
Don't quit.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show, or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.